Okay, is everybody back?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So, well, this is our usual announcements period. So, Caroline, you want to sort of just describe what you're doing and what your group did at the Sea Level Rise Summit?
Right. So the CLEO Project is our three-year initiative to amplify the climate change conversation in diverse circles. So phase one of it is to get tens of thousands to answer the project questions succinctly. What is climate change all about and what's my role? So that people could own a piece of the conversation. And even scientists, we got Michael Mann answering it too, which was on video, which was kind of cool. And we got Tamara. So we're doing this at many, many levels. We're doing this with bank employees, with schools, with colleges, with businesses. So people are signing up, like 62 employees that want to answer the question and picking a date when they will turn in these responses to me. Wells Fargo, I have a senior vice president on my board of directors. He got 62. It's all voluntary. I don't want to coerce anybody. So he got 62 employees to commit to turning in their responses by October 28. And Bank of America found out and said, okay, we're going to get 97. And University of Miami Business Department got this many, and now the Communications Department wants to top that. So we're provoking the numbers that are going to engage in answering the question as a first layer of getting people who maybe haven't thought about it to think about it. And then we offer phase two, which is training to be a climate communicator with a commitment and support to reach 100 people or more. And all along, we have science cafes and forums and leadership and film screenings and panel discussions, all this social learning to sort of pitch the phase one and the phase two possibilities to young professionals, seniors, kids, and everybody in between. So this has taken off, and the Youth Task Force is now showing up at these conferences with their flip cameras and one sheet where people can answer the question in writing or on video. And they have online green T-shirts that say, ask me about CLEO. And we're going to put on the back now, climate change, own it. And people want to buy these T-shirts, so we're going to make it a revenue stream for us. So it's taking off, and we're just getting staff in August and September to scale this up significantly. And,
so is this all volunteer, or is there a paid core group?
The Youth Task Force is all volunteer. I have a great advisory council that's all volunteer, and I have two paid staff, and me, I would be the third, and then two more AmeriCorps coming in September. So I'll have a staff of five and tons of volunteers.
Great.
But it's becoming the replicable model I was hoping it would be, because, like, I was at a public garden conference, and the mayor of Denver had a representative there, and Denver Botanic Garden, and they want me to come out there and help them launch the CLEO project there. Ontario, Canada is interested as well, Chicago. So we're hoping that with the staffing and the next scale-up phase, we'll have this model where the quick one-day training makes any site able to spread this model of engagement.
Terrific. Great.
And Tamara answered it at the Sea Level Rise Summit. She
yes,
did a very
I
good
did.
Job.
Yes,
and
I did.
I appreciate that, yes.
Okay, are there other announcements? Well, one thing that I wanted to make sure everybody knew, and also sort of get some recommendations. As everybody knows, we put together a set of session proposals for the GSA, Geological Society of America, meeting on climate literacy, and at the AGU meeting, American Geophysical Union meeting. And the abstract deadlines are for AGU is August 8th, and for GSA is August 14th. And I've advertised this a bit through the Climate Literacy Network a couple of weeks ago, and plus a bunch of other avenues. And so there's a range of sessions. And for GSA, there's two main sessions. One is focused on activities. So that includes formal education, informal education, and public engagement. And so, Caroline, it would be great if you could submit an abstract to that about the CLEO project. And that's relatively easy to advertise because there's only two. And then we've actually, those are two that the Climate Literacy Network put together, but there are two others in addition. So I advertise all four. But the question I have is for AGU, we have the Climate Literacy Network put together 8 proposals, but then there were others, once they were all the proposals were accepted, there were a few others that were related to climate literacy too. And so a few weeks ago when I sent out the email, I included this list of, you know, something like 12 sessions. And I guess the question is that an effective way to advertise, making a list of 12 sessions? What I did is I made put the titles of the sessions and then attached a document that had the brief descriptions of the sessions. Or are people just going to get lost in the list of sessions? Is there any thoughts on that? Because we really would like to get, in order for the sessions to run, each session needs, at AGU should have 20 abstracts submitted. Otherwise, they'll combine sessions. And GSA, we need at least 12 in each of the sessions. The other one at GSA is around research and evaluation as opposed to the activities themselves. So I don't know, does anybody have any thoughts about effective avenues for advertising these and whether...
Well, I appreciated the clarity of your email, and it was a nice summary. But I think, I speak just for myself, you know, the typical 2 hours I dedicate to email every day is this wave breaking at me and my trying to pluck out the two or three things I want to keep and follow up on. And I think follow-up targeted reminders to those of us in particular that you think haven't pitched in for a while or has something to share is probably not a bad idea. It's kind of babying us a bit, but it's the reality of, you know, I think what you're trying to do is admirable. And I'm kind of apologizing almost for not being more careful and responding and trying to schedule this for myself, because I do have things to say, just I'm running out of time to...
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, maybe some of your volunteer staff will be able to present. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily have to be you if you don't have time. It's just, I guess, the more specific question is, yes, I'm going to send out a reminder email. What I'm a little concerned about, if people just go to the AGU site, they're going to see hundreds of sessions, and you can narrow it down by education. But then you probably have about 40 or 50 sessions. So is sending a list of 12 sessions, you know, so I sort of said, well, people might get lost in the list. And last year we only had 7, and I thought, well, all right, that's kind of at the limit, but now we have 12. And so I'm just a little concerned that if I send somebody a list that they might not look at it because it's so much, as opposed to if I were to send an email that only had listed a few. But the problem with that is that I can't target. I don't have the time to target them. Like, I know which sessions might be most appropriate to you, Caroline. But for me to send you an individual email and somebody else, and I can't do that.
Right.
So I was just wondering. I mean, it could be that to the Climate Literacy Network, I send the entire list, and then it may be, Caroline, if somebody in your organization can say, okay, these sessions are the ones that are most relevant, and then send those out to your lists, the ones that might be that might winnow it down to those that are a little bit more relevant. And if everybody could forward it on once, even if they just pick and choose from the list, that would be really helpful. I'm just concerned that I'm not getting to everybody, and then when people get barraged with a list of 14 sessions or whatever it is, 12, 14, that they don't read the list at all.
I think so. Well, I don't know. What do people think?
This is Scott. I do think, I mean, this has been a really important part of what we've been able to do, certainly in the last, I guess, 2 or 3 years, that we've been able to coordinate a number of sessions. So I like the idea of saying, okay, these ones are out there, and then really inviting people to pass them on to their network.
Right.
I think that sort of, you know,
I think I might that make that more explicit on the next email, that have people send it on.
And just make a request to say, okay, you know, everyone's part of different networks. You know, select you know, a couple of sessions that you would like to see your colleagues present at, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you now, for GSA, we have 2 abstracts submitted to the session, so we need more than that.
Yes.
And it doesn't surprise me tremendously. Lots of people wait till the last minute, so it's the summer.
Yes.
But it's August 8th and 14th are these deadlines, right? They're right there.
Right. Yeah. They're just in a couple of weeks now, so people really need to be thinking about it, even if they don't submit the abstract for another week or so. I'm going to try to get mine submitted this week because the rest of a lot of my staff is going to be on vacation at that time in August, so we're going to have to get ours submitted really fast.
And I have one that I wanted to do too, so, and it's not done yet.
Well, they're not long. That's the saving grace. These things are pretty short.
Not a paper.
Yeah.
Yes. So, Tamara, I think that would be a good way to proceed. Is just resend the one you sent out in July the 5th, and then just really encourage people to pass it.
Yeah.
Work their network, and you can say that so far the number of abstracts would indicate that we're probably going to have more sessions available to it.
Mm-hmm.
So our presence would be lower. So yeah, a little encouragement.
Yeah. Okay. I'll do that. I'll probably send it out in the next day or so.
Okay.
And then I'll probably follow up in a week with another one.
Yeah.
Now that we're getting close to the deadline.
That's right.
Thank you for doing that, Annie.
Yes, really appreciate that.
Okay, sure. Okay, any other announcements?
Well, I guess I might be the only other person on the call.
No, we actually, I can tell you we have, let's see.
Actually, Frank.
We have eight people on the. We have eight people on the call. So that was Frank. I heard Frank.
Well, we're in our last. We have 92 teachers coming out to our institute next week. So wanted to try and get on at least one call this summer before it all. But we're pretty excited.
Is that a good number? That seems like a great number.
You know, we've been really lucky the last 2 years. We had 95 last summer, too.
Okay. So this
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Tamara.
One of the things I'll suggest is that at the workshop that we had this summer in Texas and Mississippi, there was a call for sessions at the South Central GSA meeting. It's going to be, I think, in the fall sometime. And we had two of our teachers propose a session, one teacher from Texas and one teacher from Mississippi proposing a session on climate literacy. And so Kristen, you might think about having either your teacher submit an abstract or propose a session for one of the meetings in their region.
Yeah. Well, they're all Minnesota teachers because we're focused on our Minnesota's Changing Climate project.
Right. So potentially the GSA meeting that's in that region, that's why I suggested the regional meetings, because
mm-hmm.
that might be much more relevant to them.
Yeah.
And much more affordable to go to.
I do know, because it's daunting to me, too. I'm working on one for the Great Lakes education piece. For those of us in education, the abstract writing process is different than what we're used to submitting for a conference.
Mm.
So I'm not sure if, I mean, I went to my resources, people I know that have done it before, but if sending, I know it's more work, but, you know, something that alleviates that tension, just try, this is some key points of how to do this, because these are all more education-focused sessions, these climate
mm-hmm.
literacy ones.
Mm-hmm.
It might get more folks that are in education feeling comfortable about doing
that. Right. Well, that's what we've done in ours. We work on developing teacher leaders, and then, so last year we had one of our teacher leaders from Texas actually present the Earth Labs paper at AGU. So getting the teachers involved, actually in these venues where there's mostly scientists,
right.
really gives them experience that will really help them engage in this conversation more.
Yeah,
and also provide those scientists with a view of what educators really need and what it's all about. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth thinking about. I mean, what you could do is if the teachers are not real comfortable with it, you can just include them on the abstract and then work with them to actually do the, you know, be on the abstract with them and work with them to prepare them to do the presentation.
Yeah, that is, I mean, that's something we've been really talking about, is engaging more. I mean, our goal in the last couple of years has been engaging more and more with our teachers beyond the
mm-hmm.
institute. And I think that piece of encouraging them to become professionals in their area is really a really great thing. And I will be sure, I should actually do that, look into the local things that they can engage with too. I'll look at the GSA. I'll add that.
Hello, all. Is it okay if I share an update?
Absolutely.
Right. Hey, I've is Scott Carley on the phone? Did I hear you?
I am.
Awesome. Hi, Scott.
Hi,
so the reason I wanted to check with you is because the Spanish translation of climate literacy has popped up again.
Yeah.
So while I was at the Globe Annual Partners meeting in Minnesota last week, or the week before, actually, I checked with some of the Latin American Globe country coordinators about the decision to go with the word cultura for literacy. And the Mexican and I think Peruvian country coordinators both thought that was a bad idea. And that's not how it doesn't really translate the concepts or the spirit of what climate literacy is all about very well. In fact, actually, they agreed with some of our scientists at NOAA who were saying about basically comprehension was the better term to use.
Yeah.
And anyway, I just wanted to flag that for you, because just for those of you who don't remember this conversation thread about, you know, 6 months ago, but we were talking about trying to get the Spanish translations for ocean and climate literacy to use the same term for literacy. And ocean had chosen cultura, so anyway, I just want to flag that for you guys, that I'm continuously getting competency is a better term than cultura.
What's the better word? Say it again.
If I had somebody who could speak Spanish near me, I would have them read what it says. But basically, it's competency, climate competency, as opposed to climate culture, is what they're recommending. So I can send it around to the group if they thought that this was a good idea. I didn't know if there was anybody on the call or in the community that we should just bounce this around with one more time. It's going to take a community effort to get this finished off. I have everything else done. It's just this last lingering issue of what to use that concept. It doesn't translate well.
It's going to be difficult, I would say, though. I mean, Latin America and Spain, the use of Spanish is different in different countries, too.
Right. Yep.
So that translation, that word may be different. I mean, Mexican Spanish is actually usually quite different from the rest of America.
Yeah, the other place we can know is we've been in our work with Kathy Ellens at the University of Texas Austin. We have to create permission forms in Spanish for the parents of the students that we work with, and so they and I know that their IRB is very particular about the type of Spanish that we translate. You know how we translate it. There's different, like as Kristen said, there's different brands of Spanish.
Right.
So, but she may be, Kathy Ellens might be able to point to somebody who might be able to help.
So why don't I do this? I don't know who made the point about the Spanish versus the Mexican. Who was that?
Kristen.
Hey, Kristen. Sorry, I didn't recognize your voice.
Oh no.
If I remember right, Scott, the translation of the ocean literacy came from Portugal. Is that right?
I can't remember. I know there's quite a bit of work that's happened in Portugal. I'm not going to
say
quite busy with that. The other possibility, and certainly I want to make sure that it's in the loop, there's a number of folks who are part of the International Pacific Marine Educators Network. And I know that, for example, Chile has been doing quite a bit of work with the ocean literacy principle. So I want to see what Luis has to say about that with the final version.
Yeah.
I've already seen it, but then that we get into the issue of that maybe, you know, Chilean Spanish as opposed to Mexican and
absolutely. But you know, it's a tricky thing.
Yes, it is.
Hey, Bruce, did you ever talk to Karen Holweg? Karen's not on the call, is she? I'm wondering because you know, NAAEE has a pretty deep contingent of in Mexico and Latin America, I believe, as well. And so membership extent, it's North American. So
yes,
Mexico
it is.
Mexico is a part of that.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt. This is Jeannie Troy. I've been trying to get off my mute button. I'm on the board of NAAEE right now,
oh,
so I'm going to forget that
okay,
as
we go.
To answer the question myself. But
there
Frank,
you
if you send me an email, I'd be happy to pass on. Our current president is actually, he technically lives in Arizona, but he's Mexican, and he can connect you with the affiliates in Mexico as well.
Well, actually, we've been working on this for a little while and, you know, in fits and starts. But if I remember right, we went to him. Is it Felipe? Felipe? Do I remember that right? A while ago. And you know, the thing that has been true about this process is pretty much each time you ask, you get a slightly different answer. and you know, there have been different quorums, but never a true quorum. You know, there have been sub-quorum or whatever that is. But, you know, small pockets of people who lean one way and then another pocket leans another way. And at the end of the day, we don't have a Spanish translation out. And so, you know, one thought was to craft a new paragraph that just talks about this word literacy and the Spanish language. That, you know, because ultimately it's not just, you know, how to, you're not knowledgeable, you're not competent, you're not using this in society. I mean, it's like a word that sits between a bunch of words is really what this, or encompasses a bunch of words. So anyway, I don't know what the right way to do that is.
Frank, you're thinking that you would add like a paragraph or something to the document itself and say, okay, we're still struggling with a good word for this. And here are the nuances of meaning that we're after.
Yeah, because I mean,
cover everything.
Well, it's more that explain, because actually the document, as we, you know, a lot of times people kind of struggle with the word literacy in English as well.
Right, of course.
And, you know, they think one thing and some people think something else. And we're trying to really figure out how to get past the title and into the substance really quickly.
Right. Good point.
And so, you know, I don't know what the right title is, but if we had to add a paragraph to describe our process is more where I think I was going, that we looked at these words and then we looked at those words and we looked at this one and we settled on this one for this reason.
Right.
Acknowledging
and
that
everyone
not,
feels hurt, and everyone feels heard in that process. I mean, that's kind
exactly.
of what happens, and get it out.
Yeah. And then get it out.
Yeah.
So, but that's kind of, I'm the more I've done this, the more I'm thinking that's probably the right way to go.
Yep.
But, you know, we've kicked this around so many times, it's silly. And we've come up with about 6 different words.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. I don't know what the, you know, so right now I'm leaning towards this comprehension one. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's where things are now. But we ultimately have to get this settled with the ocean literacy group too, because I really don't think it would be a good idea if ocean literacy and climate literacy were using 2 different words.
This is Martha from Earth Advertising. I like the word comprehension.
Okay.
So Scott, who is working on the translation for ocean literacy? I mean, I'm assuming that Frank has been you've been in contact with them.
I mean, Frank, I assume really Sarah's probably the point person on this. Sarah Schoedner at NOAA.
It wasn't Sarah. It was some people. I mean, she knows about it, but it wasn't. She wasn't point.
It's folks in Southern Florida.
Yeah, I don't honestly remember how the Portuguese got involved.
Yeah, that would be Margarita. And I, that part of it has just simply been part of the network around ocean literacy.
Right.
I'll try to get that history because I actually don't know all of it myself, and I don't even know what the status is of the translation. So I'll check into that in the next day or two.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know if the group that did it has made it public and have been promoting it in the Spanish, but you know, if they haven't, then it still means we have a little bit of flexibility. But if they're out and kicking it around and making a lot of traction, then you know, this may be all moot. Anyway, so I just wanted to highlight that issue is still out there.
Okay, great, thanks. Okay, are there any other announcements? Or I know that last week I was away, but I understand that you had an interesting conversation about two documents that Scott had sent out, and that you had left it that would be a conversation that would be continued this week. So if people are interested, the two documents, I don't know, Scott, you were on the phone last week, so maybe you'd like to carry this conversation forward, but the two documents was one by Bill McKibben called Global Warming's Terrifying New Math, and the other by James Hansen, Nakiko Sato, and Reto Rudy on Perceptions of Climate Change, the New Climate Dice. So, Scott, do you want to carry that forward?
Yeah, just a little bit, because when we left our conversation last week, we thought we might continue it on to today. Part of it is those two articles and papers came out, I guess, a week or two before and created a bit of stir because they're intended certainly to catch people's attention, and they're quite important. And Caroline is still on the line, I hope. And
yep.
What we did from those articles is basically ask the question, is there a role for the Climate Literacy Network in fashioning messages for the general public? Martha was part of that conversation, too. We didn't feel like we quite got there, and then there was a little bit more, I think, especially Martha and Carolina were going to talk with each other, and I'd be curious whether anything happened with that conversation.
No, life got in the way. Sorry, we didn't get
the week overtake everything.
No, but
was there something what we want to do with that? Because I thought that was a really interesting discussion. Because on the network, we have focused primarily on formal education, a little bit of informal, but this notion of sort of getting the urgency, and I mean, Caroline, you certainly, and Martha, both of you have been really involved more with the general public, and I guess it's a matter of, are there other folks a part of the network that can really support those efforts to make the same points that McKibben is making, and Hansen in a little bit more of an academic sense, that people really get the urgency, get the tie with extreme weather. I think that was one of the things that was about the Hansen stuff, is just going back to his analogy around the dice and just starting to understand what this actually means from a scientific perspective. It's not the single cause. It is multiple causes that change the kind of extreme weather conditions that we've had in most of the U.S. this year.
So, Scott, I only had a chance to briefly look at the articles, but is there a balance in the articles between I know there's been worry in some context of having so much doom and gloom that people just sit down and don't want to pay attention at all.
Right.
Or is there in there a way of thinking about it that has a plus side?
Go ahead, please.
So Tamara, and one of the things that the McKibben piece did for me that was very, I guess, new, was looking at the budget, the carbon budget of the atmosphere, and mm-hmm. relative to our climate change mitigation targets, and how much more carbon we have left to put in the atmosphere relative to those targets, and then looking at decisions like the Keystone, Canadian tar sands project, and looking at how much, carbon would be, if that happens, how much does that contribute to the total carbon budget of the atmosphere for the planet for us? I mean, that's a new way of talking about it in relative to decisions that we have to make in energy and other things. That's really powerful stuff because it gives people the ability to look at that decision relative to, you know, climate change in a stark way. Mm-hmm. Did other people take it that way?
Yeah, and we also talked about, I agree that there's a tipping point of the doom and gloom, but I think, you know, we talked about doing a communication strategy, you know, writing a strategy and then agreeing on the strategy and maybe coming up with some a little bit of creative together. We also talked about how Caroline and I were both involved in contests like 30-second science bites. I was telling you I own sciencebites.com, where scientists compete to, you know, talk about the climate in 30 seconds in a way that people can comprehend. That's what I remember from the conversation. I'm not at my desk.
But, you know, I'll stop after this point. At the last year's NAAA conference, the panel session that Karen Holwig chaired, one of the things that Don Dugenhaus, one of our members, I don't believe he's on the call today, said was, are you on this call, Don?
Don was on last week.
So okay.
Conversation.
But one of the things he said was that perhaps the best thing we could do in engaging people in climate was not to make this entirely huge, complicated problem understood very quickly, was more to say that this is a really important problem and it's going to take you time to explore and understand and learn about this. And it's absolutely important that you do in a short amount of time, meaning that the contact time you have, if it's 30 seconds, if it's a minute, you know, like in an informal institution, it's really about stop and take a look at this problem. And so where the learning beyond, you know, that first engagement happens is unknown. Adult learning, not adult awareness. But you know, this problem really requires people to take a serious, deep, thoughtful, skillful look at it as adults and as kids. And that might be a really important place to start the engagement. Did that make sense?
Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you, I think everybody's right. This is Caroline, and very eloquently said and very true. And it takes me back to the whole Miller analysis of the smorgasbord approach of how people are learning, the fact that climate literacy is a journey and we're trying to get people on the train at kind of any level. And, you know, I'm about casting very wide nets that might only reach some at a very surface level, but will provoke many others to go deeper and deeper and deeper. So I think we're all saying the same thing. And last week's call, you know, in the ethics piece that came out from Bowman and that exchange lately, I mean, it's pretty clear that we're all doing magical stuff. And there is no magic bullet. There are many magic bullets.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one way people learn. Some people want to do it because it's altruistic. It's the right thing to do. Others know, what is the economic gain? Why do I care? So we have to have these multiple approaches. So last week, for me, gave me a little clarity in what my frustration is because I think the Climate Literacy Network has fostered such a diverse, broad, deep, multi-layered, incredible resource, and we're doing incredible things. What's missing for me is a common voice. So I was pushing the talking points. I was pushing talking points or public service announcements that came from the top, federal government, EPA, whatever, that talked about the urgency, that talked about the reality, that gave a face and a voice to climate change that America at large could identify with, all ethnic, all careers, all ages, and so on. And, I mean, even Mueller himself coming out now and saying, okay, I get it, that's quite a message. And Martha and I think we have good energy and we could probably do something pretty brilliant. But more than that, I think the Climate Literacy Network needs to find a way to directly ask for national public service announcements around these 5 or 8 or 6 or whatever we come up with major points that everybody in the American public needs to know. And you all articulated a few of them right today in today's call. I don't claim to have a working list, but I think that's the umbrella that will give the credibility to all our individual fires we're lighting.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of my direction. I didn't know where I was going last week, but that's where I came out. And not to say that we don't need to keep doing things that we're doing and doing them better and well and bigger, but I want us to provoke that national voice. This is science. This is fact.
So Caroline, that's really interesting because through the entire lifetime of the Climate Literacy Network, it's been really clear that things, as you said, have to happen at the local, regional level. But this idea of national coordination or putting together a voice that can be used and leveraged by all of these individual efforts would be really worthwhile. So we could potentially try to sort of hone in, just sort of put it out there and try to hone in on some larger scale messages that might be useful. But if we get enough input to, and we could sort of put this to a broad community beyond just the Climate Literacy Network, there's all of those tri-agency climate change education groups, and if we sort of put out a straw man there, we could potentially get some good comments from a very wide community.
Yeah.
Well, I think so here's what I think. I think, you know, I was at that White House Summit for Women and the Environment. There were about 75 of us, and Lisa Jackson was there, and whatever. And it was pretty incredible, the energy in the room, the definitely wanting to effect change. You know, climate change wasn't the only thing talked about, but it was, you know, important and big. And Lisa Jackson said in her very first statement that these are her principles or her goals as administrator. The first one was taking action on climate change. So when we had chance to break out sessions and reporting out, the only thing I came out of that pushing was the public service announcement and the need for the EPA to own this.
Right.
And I think if one head in the room nodded, every head nodded. I mean, there was unanimous agreement that that would be good if it was done professionally, credibly, and I think Climate Literacy Network could say, we could be the vehicle to help you get input or ideas from a diverse public of what the main point should be. That exercise in and of itself would be extremely educational. But if they have a 2-month period of taking public input on what the main messages should be, and then they come up with a strategy, and in 6 months we've got the PSAs out from the federal government, then all our work takes on better urgency, credibility, momentum, everything we're looking for, I think.
So one thing on the federal piece is that America's Climate Choices chose the word carefully on this, and they said national, not federal. And I think the federal, as a civil servant, is an important piece, but I think the national is actually more powerful.
Mm-hmm. I thank you for that. I think
because it takes it out of the political realm.
Correct.
Some.
Correct. Yeah.
And you know, I think that Department of Energy and EPA and potentially the U.S. Global Change Research Program can play a strong role in that. But if it's, you know, national, it brings in the business sector who have powerful voices in this area, and the religious communities and others part of that national fabric that I think is facilitating the development of a straw man that they could iterate with, I think would be something the network could help with.
Yeah.
What's the right tone approach?
Mm-hmm.
It would be good to start with something. And I think that we could definitely start the ball,
yeah,
but we'd have to widen the circle.
Yeah. No, I think that we could do that. Frank, do you have a sense of if we were came up with this piece that we start with, who would we go to with it to facilitate moving that forward?
Well, there are groups here. There are groups that help us with this. But I think this requires a wider conversation. And my Google Voice is starting to act up.
Yeah, you're echoing now.
Yeah, I'm gonna hang up and call him with my phone.
Okay. So what I was trying to ask Frank was if we really want these larger groups to buy into moving this forward, what groups would be the ones to take this first draft that we might come up with too? I mean, I would be willing to pursue that if I had a sense that, you know, where to take it so that we could actually effectively move it forward to potentially get the funding to create these public service announcements.
Well, Tamara, perhaps our first thing is to get those, identify those groups that we would want to be connected up with. Obviously, the tri-agency folks who have been funded to look at education programs. But as Frank alluded to, there are communities of faith. There's certainly, a number of nonprofits that are very actively involved in messaging. And I guess what we're asking is, do you see a role for a national strategy around talking about climate change? And we just make that invitation. And, we're in a great place because we essentially have a draft document for that point, which is, of course, the climate literacy principles. You would expect that the message would come out of some of that language.
Those are much more detailed. I mean, I'm sort of thinking of things on the order of not the specifics, but the understanding aspects at the high level that the McKibben article addressed.
Absolutely, that's exactly where I'm going. Yeah, I'm just simply saying that we clearly have expertise in distilling what the message is, but even the climate literacy document is too detailed. That's not a PSA
right.
discussion.
So what I was saying, in the terms of the time frame we have, it seems to me that if we on the climate literacy network come up with a sort of a straw man to start with, we could potentially use the sessions at the AGU meeting to get broader input. As well as going to other kinds of organizations.
Yeah.
We could potentially contact the various CSEP Phase 1 groups, which worked with a wide variety of communities, beyond
yeah.
just the scientific and educational communities, but all kinds of communities. That might be another avenue that we might be able to leverage.
Right.
But I think the one thing to kind of drive our timeline, though, is sorry, I'm on the phone now. Is the conversation could start earlier than November,
mm-hmm.
Depending on how things break in the natural system, and how things break in the political dialogue and conversations. And I think we need to be ready with a good solid version soon. Mm-hmm. And then iterate over time like we could with the AGU opportunity.
Right.
The
no, I was thinking that we would come up with a draft well before then. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've got Jeff Nisbet and Climate Nexus, and then the Climate Engage group, and you've got Tony Lizowitz and Bob Doppelt and others who've been working on this stuff for a while that we'd want to tap into those different communities in the near term to kind of get a richer set of thinking that this straw man sort of exists, but doesn't all the way exist yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think even Bill McKibben would want to be involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
He's a powerful voice.
Yes.
Well, I think, I don't know Scott Colley extremely well, But I would nominate him to start the straw man. And I actually think that, you know, giving all of these great people who have done so much thinking and writing and research on this is absolutely the way to go. But getting something out there sooner rather than later and having them all sign off on whatever the final seven messages are would be very profound and very credible, as long as it doesn't take, like, too long.
Well, Caroline, I agree with you. I think we should probably get a small team together to sit down and kind of kick this around. A person I know who's been working on this as well in our community is Tom Bowman.
Yes, I love him.
You know, he's absolutely been working in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Tony Lizowitz has been working on this as well. So I think, you know, if we got maybe kind of like we did in the response to the NGSS,
mm-hmm.
that if Scott and, you know, Tony and Tom and you know, I don't know who else.
Martha.
Who?
Martha.
Martha wants
to. Oh,
Martha.
Yeah. And there you go. I mean, just, but, you know, sat down and actually worked on this a little bit. I think a small group of people could probably come up with a good explanation soon.
Well, what we can do is we can invite these people. And basically, we don't have things scheduled for this call in the next, you know, for the next month at least.
Yeah.
We could potentially just invite these people to the call next week, and those of us who are, because I'd like to be part of this conversation also.
I like that idea. The next call would be on a communications campaign, a real campaign.
But it needs to be moderated, and I do love the, I don't know if I'm going to be able to participate for the next couple of Tuesdays, and I don't mind, but I do love the fact that we have a Martha in there who, you know, the lofty thinking and the public access to information ability-wise, I think we need to have that kind of diversity. And with Frank, and I think it's a nice team, just who you mentioned, and inviting Bowman and Lizowitz and them would be, I think, run with it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll write a creative strategy, a one-page creative strategy to look at.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would be great, Martha.
That would be wonderful.
Sometimes when you have a document you're going over, it gets the conversation going.
Yeah,
yeah, no,
exactly.
That'd be great.
What
we can do is we can post it on the teleconference schedule so that anybody who calls in can download it and take a look at it ahead of time.
Yeah.
Martha, one thing that you might not know, and maybe you do, is at the beginning of the U.S. Global Change Research Program's, you know, Global Climate Change Impacts in the United States document from 2009, there is a set of key findings, I think it's called, right at the beginning of the document, and there's 10 things that are kind of well written. You know, somebody else we should think about in this context is Susan Joy Hassel. She's worked a lot of times as a science writer with a lot of the science community, IPCC and others, but she's a talented writer, and she helped us craft those key findings, and they were written in a way that was much more publicly understandable. So I think
this
there's some
the
of those
strategic plan, Frank.
No, this is in the impacts report.
Okay.
Impacts in the United States. The key findings at the beginning of that. It gives you kind of a solid scientific base to take the messages and add them to that. I don't know. I mean, again, they're too detailed for what we're talking about, but they do offer us especially the 10th one, which is about the choices. You know, choices we make matter greatly on this issue.
Yeah.
What's the name of the document?
It's the Global
Climate. I actually found it, and I'll just check it out.
Yeah, but it's in the front. It's the introduction section. It's the key findings.
Page.
What's that?
It's actually on a separate web page right now.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. If you send the link, I'll create a strategy from that, because we don't need to debate the key copy points. So because they're already created is what you're
exactly
saying. So we use those as a key copy point.
Right, but
anyone else wants it at this point? We'll just start that.
But the key difference, I think, in what we're talking about here and what was done there is that is a science report, not about what we should do relative to that 10th finding. you know, this is taking that 10th finding and then applying it to, you know, a lot of the other aspects that wouldn't come in a science document.
Yeah. Good.
Well, I'll if you're going to send me a link, I'll work on that. Maybe I'll send it to Caroline first. Caroline, we'll have a conversation, and then we'll...
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Yep.
And then Scott?
Yeah, I just sent it to you.
Okay.
Yeah, you should have it soon.
Yeah, send it to me also. This is Tamara.
Well?
And Tamara, yes.
So if anybody has any questions about what that is or where it is or how it was done, or anything, I'm more than happy to answer them. So you guys can call me.
Okay.
So should we invite Susan Joy onto the call next week, or does she just come on?
No, she. I don't know if she's part of the listserv or the network. Do you know, Tamara?
I can look it up, but I don't know. Let's see if I can quickly.
Well, what we could do is we could come up with a little campaign, and then we could bring some people in on a jury to rate the best message. You know, we should.
There you go.
Yep.
And we don't want too many people at the very beginning, right?
Right.
But we definitely want to test the message, and I also think we could test the message through the collective, through BBMG. The collective is a new focus group that's got thousands of people on it. It's a very clever idea. I'm working on with the BBMG. So we can test the message. And once you've tested the message, it's easier to raise the money.
Yes.
I like that.
Good.
But you know, as far as adding people like Susan Joy Hassel, kind of what I'm thinking that might work is just a small group of people that kind of find their own time to meet and talk and work in whatever collaborative way they choose. But if you got four or five people doing this, meeting at times, like Caroline, you said you couldn't meet Tuesdays at this time for some reason, for the next little while, that maybe, you know, some other time. Would work for those four or five people. And that, you know, once they start working, then it makes it much more efficient for them to get it done in a short period of time.
Identify a core group after the after next week's call.
Something like that.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, so let's have next week Tuesday call. I just have commitments for the next two Tuesdays. If I could work around and get free at one, I will. But I'm happy this is happening. I am elated. And I think you made a good point, if that was you, Frank, about getting a small committee after next week's for this brainstorm mode. But we need somebody to moderate next week so that, you know, we stay focused and we stay on, phrasing and language, okay? So
yeah, we can manage that next week.
Yeah,
I can help to moderate that.
Martha.
Well, thank you all. I feel really good.
Sounds good. Yeah, this sounds really good.
All right.
Good.
Well, thanks
appreciate
a lot, everybody. And so we'll be looking forward to the emails, and we'll talk next week.
Fantastic.
All right. Bye.
Hey, bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Great. Bye now.